Welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast, episode 140. Or is it 171? No, it's 205. My confusion comes from the fact that for the third year in a row, our first October podcast has been dedicated to a Reading manager fighting to save his job. It truly is the never-ending story. Welcome to, as I say, episode 205 with your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me, I suppose fittingly, for a conversation that we must have had so many times, is Westy. How's it going, mate?
We have. Same conversation, different names, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for just before we jump in, then a quick thank you to the Patreon patrons who continue to donate to us, having this conversation once again, and hopefully informing you somewhat as we do it. And thank you to everyone who contributes in that way. And as we go into episode 205, we are talking about Jose Gomez, of course, and the 4-1 defeat that Reading had to Fulham on the midweek, and also the 1-0 defeat we've had to Bristol City on the weekend. So let's jump into it then and dig out what went wrong.
View from the Tilehurst End, recapping this week's championship action.
So Westy, let's begin with a bit of a sit rep. We're kind of, you know, we're far enough into the season now, 11 games to start taking the table seriously, and Reading are in the relegation zone. We're below a Huddersfield side who we easily beat 2-0 a few weeks ago and who lost 7 of their first 8 games. They're now above us. And really, this week, just as a whole, really, has just been pretty disastrous.
Yeah, it's another poor week. And it seems like we're seeing the same mistakes week in, week out. And I can't understand how a Reading side that hasn't changed at all, hardly, can get those points a few weeks back against Cardiff and Huddersfield, and picked up points against West Brom and Swansea, capitulate so badly against Fulham, and then not being able to get back in the game against Bristol City when they probably should have done.
Yeah, and that Fulham game, 4-1, we were 3-0 down at half-time. I think that might even be the third time that Jose Gomez has seen us be 3-0 down at home by half-time in his pretty short managerial career at the Medeski. So I think the Swansea game and the Leeds game were roughly that scoreline at half time. So it keeps happening, really. Certainly more than I've ever seen it before as a Reading fan. And I suppose the big thing with the Fulham game, we were already 1-0 down when it happened. And obviously, Fulham had scored a pretty decent goal to put themselves 1-0 up. But John Swift getting sent off was a huge turning point. And for me, he's kind of one of the worst players to get sent off, because you can't really replace him out of the suspension. You can't really move other players into that position. And also, it was just weird, wasn't it, how it was Swift who got sent off. He's so meek and mild usually. I've complained a lot about him being so easy to brush off. And he dives in with two of the weirdest reckless lunges that are both complete stonewall yellow cards in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was a random one, I'd say, from a player that we never see tackle. It was rare that you'd see him dive in on two separate occasions. I mean, the second one, I mean, without having a real close look at the replay, I know a lot of people said he slipped, but even so, he's made a challenge in the first one where he could have easily been red carded anyway. Once you've been earmarked for something like that, the referee's always looking for you, and to go and do it so quickly afterwards, he was asking for trouble. But I honestly thought that Reading were nowhere near the game with Swift on the pitch. And I think really, because they chased shadows for the first 20 minutes until Swift got sent off, I don't think it made a great deal of difference. We'd have had 11 anyway. We still would have lost that game, without doubt in my mind.
Well, I think Yaku Mate had a chance as he broke through 1-1, and then I think Puskas, it might have been, as their keeper came rushing out and sort of made a hash of the clearance, and we had a mild chance of maybe doing something with that. But it's just, I don't know, it just felt like that sort of game where Fulham went into it having not been that good a team sort of for the season. And, you know, they've drawn the weekend as well. So we made a team. It was just so comfortable for them. It was such an easy night for Fulham. And is it, I can't work out what exactly the sort of problem with it is. Is it a formational problem? Is it just sort of our mentality? Because you say about chasing shadows, Fulham looked like a Premier League team when we played them. And I'm not convinced that they are, you know, even, you know, guaranteed playoff contenders, let alone automatic promotion contenders.
Well, the thing is, Mark,
we're quite good at doing that, aren't we?
Yeah, the thing is, Mark, I was just about to say exactly the same thing. We see it against Charlton. We made them look like they should be in the Champions League, not just come out of Division 1. We see it against Blackburn, who again are an average Championship side, picking up average results all season. They come here, beat us, I thought, quite easily. They made a bit of a game of it near the end, but again, they made it look quite simple. And especially at home at the moment, we can't buy a win. I mean, from that Cardiff game where we looked like we were the team that should have been in the Champions League, ever since then, we don't look like we're going to pick up any points. And I think there's some shocking stats that I've heard over the last couple of months about being behind in games. I think it's 10 games now we've been behind, we've got no points. Or 9 out of 10 games we haven't got any points. It's ridiculous. It doesn't seem any end in sight to it at the moment. And just as you said there, Yaku Mate missing a decent chance and Puskas missing a decent chance. We're beginning to say that pretty much every week. And to be fair to Mate, he scored a great goal in that game. And if it had been an equaliser, we'd have been eulogising about it. Because it was a late consolation, it's sort of been brushed under the carpet. But strikers are missing too many chances. And with the amount of money we spent on strikers, it shouldn't really be happening, I don't think.
Yeah, they feel like they're shot on confidence at the moment, especially Puskas, who Gomez himself talked about after the Bristol game. And it's difficult because when we are behind so often, the pressure is on and everything like that. And it is, you know, it's a different ball game when we're behind. And I'll talk in a minute about how the stats kind of and how that's affecting us as a team. But for the strikers specifically, it creates a lot of pressure. And you can, for me, I think you can make a lot of excuses for Puskas in particular and kind of for the strikers as a whole. You can say, oh, they're coming into a new team. They need to adapt. Maybe they are getting some chances, but they're not scoring. Puskas has hit the bar a couple of times. Maybe he's been unlucky. These sort of things. But for me, I would give a striker who didn't cost us £8 million a bit more credit in that sense. When they've been, if we pay all of the add-ons for Puskas and he does become our record signing, that is exactly the sort of thing that he should be doing. He should be able to adapt quicker. He should be able to kind of brush off misses. He should be able to make sure he gets it in the net, not hits the bar. Those sort of things. And I can get what Puskas is about as a player, and I don't dislike him in any way, really. But it's just not enough for what you really need out of a player.
The thing is, Mark, if you had a 75 grand striker missing some of the chances he's had over the last 4 or 5 weeks, we'd be complaining about it. So to have a player come with that billing and start so well as well, especially against Cardiff, because he looked great. It's just a massive drop off in form. And it's not as if he's, I wouldn't say he's getting loads of chances in games, but the chances that he's been getting recently, I think, have been good opportunities to score. And to hit the bar from 5 yards out or to miss the target or not get your feet sorted out so you can put the ball in the net, it's just basics. And it doesn't matter what side you're in. Your job as a striker is one thing and one thing only, is to get that ball and put it in the back of the net. It's as simple as that, really. I mean, it sounds simple when you speak about it, because it is in many ways. And with that billing and with this amount of money that we spent on him and Jao, you expect them to be doing better. And I thought their partnership looked good against Cardiff. But ever since, it's looked like there isn't one. They're too far apart, I think, in many games. I don't think either of them are being played to their strengths, to give some credit to them. I don't think you want to see Puskas coming short for balls. I think you want him on the last man. And I think Jao, I mean, when we see him play for Sheffield Wednesday, again, he looked like a great player. He looked like he could hold a ball. He looked like he was a target man. I have said before when I've been on the show that I think he's a sort of lazy sort of player, sort of lopes around, doesn't put in a lot of work until he's got the ball. Which is all right to carry when you're doing well, but obviously everyone really is going to notice it when you're in the bottom three.
I must say, I think the same about Puskas, actually. There were children who have just been put in detention for 7 weeks who look happier than Puskas does when he's made to chase down a runner. He just doesn't... He looks completely not bothered for those sort of periods of the game, and I kind of get that. If you're a striker, kind of with Zhao as well, I kind of have some respect for a striker who doesn't want to chase down, because not every team has to do this pressing that's obviously quite popular in a lot of teams. And not, you know, you can defend from the midfield and all that sort of stuff. It is very possible to have your tactics set up without your strikers having to do too much off the ball. But as you say, the way you've sort of described it, and I agree that Zhao is a good penalty box striker, and Puskas, again, you'd think that with his physicality and his sort of quick thinking to an extent, that he is the sort of striker that you can kind of just put the balls into the box and let them deal with themselves. But we don't really play that. And the last thing I want to say on the attack is that I'm not entirely sure anymore what Gomez's plan for the attack is, in the sense that you knew that, for example, Koppel get the ball down the wing, get it in. You knew that for...
Yeah, you knew it was coming, yeah.
Yeah, you knew for, I guess, Stam, you did know that we're going to patiently build out the back and work our cute little openings and maybe hit the byline occasionally and get, you know, get something going that way. How would you describe Jose Gomez's main plan for attack at the moment?
I'm not entirely sure, as you just pointed out there. There's no, if we don't know, watching from the stands, then it makes you wonder if the players know what exactly they're supposed to be doing. Ajao has been played in a number of different sort of, always up front, don't get me wrong, but he's been playing sort of holding, he's coming deep, playing midfield a little bit, a bit like Lewis Grabham did when he's probably more of a striker and they've made him play on the wing. Puskas, I think he's been isolated quite a lot, even though there's two of them up front, which again is a concern for me. If you're playing two up front, then they should be working quite close together. I think they're far too far apart, which is obviously making us less, giving us less opportunities to score goals. I think Jao, you've got to hit. I think you can hit him. I think he's a good hold-up player. And he needs Puskas playing off of him. But I think their positions are too far apart. And they're not only that, now he's stopped playing them together. They're not started together, I don't think, that regularly since they played against Cardiff together. Mate, again, he's come in. You know what you get from Mate. You know he will score the odd goal in this division. He scored something like 15 or so last year, didn't he? So you know he's capable. And his work rate is a bit better than them too. So maybe that's what the manager's thinking. And the same as Boye, when he's come off the bench, he has some nice touches and then he'd go and miss control one and give the ball away. He's another player that looks good, but it's not sort of producing what we would hope they would. I think now, actually, getting away from the games a little bit, I think now we have to start questioning Jose's ideas on getting rid of all our wingers, basically. McCleary's still sat in the under-23s. You've got Barrow that's been sent out abroad. We haven't got any real natural wingers now at the club, except for McCleary, who's not obviously doesn't like. And I think people will start pointing the finger at this in the next couple of weeks if results don't change, because when you've got two senior pros sat in the under-23s, haven't done an awful lot wrong, and you're losing games, it would be a surprise not to see him at some point. But I think his pride will keep him in the under-23s. But whether that's helping us as a club, it's not for me to decide. But in my opinion, it wouldn't hurt us, to have him back involved in some way, shape or form. I'm not saying there will be or anything, don't get me wrong. But when results ain't going well, these sort of ideas and will be questioned.
Well, yeah, anyone who looks at Gav McLeary's Instagram at the moment will see constant sort of photos with captions like perseverance and all that sort of stuff. So you can imagine that for him, it's probably quite frustrating as well. And the wingers thing, I think that our best formation would be a diamond where you basically, because we've got four pretty decent centre mids in Ajari, Swift, Pele and Rinamotta, and you put them all in, you got a diamond there and you got some sort of plan of attack. But we've not gone with that. We played a back four against Fulham and then went back to the back three against Bristol with Miazga returning. We conceded an early goal. You'd think with a back three, the idea of a ball into the box, we would have three centre-backs to clear it, but it was a free header. And that was that, really. Reading had a couple of chances towards the end of the game. Lucas Boye with a decent turn and shot that produced a relatively OK save for the Bristol goalkeeper, and it was the same story as it was basically the same story as it was for the Middlesbrough and Swansea games. Go a goal down, have a late rally, and obviously we got a point at Swansea and not at the other two. And this kind of, we've talked about the attack, but the defence I actually think is the bigger issue here. Even though we've only conceded 17 goals in 11 games, we've had 8 games in a row now where we've conceded the first goal. So it just feels to me like teams are taking the lead, especially when we're away from home. Teams are taking the lead. They're sitting in. They're knowing that we can't finish. And it makes us actually, in the stats, if you look at the expected goals and stuff and the shots we're having, yes, we are having quite a lot, but that's because the teams are already a goal ahead and it's a different ball game to if we're 0-0 or 1-0 up. So teams are just, you know, getting that ball into the box and taking advantage of our slack defending. And then our attack is, as most attacks are, kind of unable to bring every game back into their court, and it's just a week in, week out that's happening time and time again.
Not only that, it's the soft goals. I mean, you alluded to it there, the soft goals are given away from headers from players that are 6-7 yards out, completely unmarked, when you're playing three centre backs and three central midfield players. You know, how has he been managed to have the freedom of the park or the 6-yard box to have a free header at goal when you're playing three centre-backs. It baffles me. And it's not the first time it's happened this season. If you watch the goal, though, in isolation, Morrison does... what I think Morrison done was correct, because he had a player he was marking. The player in front of him became unmarked, so he moved across the pitch to mark him, and Miazga should have stepped back in inside for him and marked the player, eventually scored the goal. So if you want to isolate the goal, I think it was Miazga's fault. But where whose fault it is, it doesn't really matter. Like I said, it's just the soft and weak goals we give away. So the goal the other week was against Blackburn, where the guys had like three touches on the edge of the penalty box. You think, why has that not been shut down? I thought Fulham sort of walked the ball into net at times. It was just too easy for them. And for a team that's playing three centre-backs and three central midfielders, and on Saturday playing two holding midfielders, I don't know how we're conceding goals that weakly. They're not scoring worldies from outside the box. You know, someone's hit one, it's gone straight in the top corner. There's nothing you can do about. They're scoring goals from within the six to 8 yards out, free headers or tap-ins. And that is inexcusable as far as I'm concerned.
And I can say another type of goal that we're not conceding, and that's the sort of controversial goal. I actually can't think of the last time that Reading had a goal like a penalty or a free kick or something, and we felt really hard done by it, because we're just not getting... I mean, we're not giving away penalties because we're not getting tight enough to the man. So
no, that's what I'm saying. There's people unmarked. So, that's why. It's putting pressure on the strikers to score, but they're not even doing that. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if teams, well, especially Bristol City, they weren't out of sight. Do you know what I mean? It was 1-0 pretty much for 80 minutes of the game. And when we're getting opportunities, we're not scoring. So if you can't keep goals out and you can't score, you'll get relegated, and that's exactly why they're in the bottom three.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about is we'll let Jose Gomez have his little word from after the Bristol City game now, and then we'll come back and talk about what exactly to do with our manager.
Well, again, a completely different game for comparing the first half and the second half. For what everything that we produce, the way the situations that we create, it's not a fair result, but. You know, again, in football, if you don't score, if you are not clinical in the right moments, and you concede a goal, and the game can finish like finished today, 1-0. Is it fair? No. But did my players deserve better result? Yes, they did. Our fans, our club deserve a better situation? Yes. But this football, and only these players can turn around this situation. And again, with everything that we watched today, especially in the second half, we need to win one game to turn this situation around.
So Wesley, there's kind of two questions here, isn't there? As we're dab hands are doing this sort of analysis now on whether managers to keep their job or not. It's the question one of how long do you think Jose Gomez will get, and how long do you think Jose Gomez should get as Reading manager as we continue on this form?
Well, if you continue on this form, you can't have long, can you? It doesn't matter who you are. We're already in the bottom three. So we've got 8 points. I think most of our points come within a six-day period. And since then, we've been fruitless in front of goal and poor at the back. Eventually, you've got to say to the manager, you've spent a lot of money. I think he's probably spent more money than any other Reading manager since I've certainly in my time, and well before that, because no one spent any money back then. So he is the biggest spending manager I can certainly think of. And with that comes the pressure of getting results. And last year, let's face it, we weren't great last year when he came in. He turned things around, but we were pretty poor before that. The loan players made a massive difference. And you could say, you know, the loan players definitely kept us up. But if you look at the side he's got now, it's definitely looking player for player. A better team than we had last year, but the results aren't improving. They're not even as good, I don't think. And at home, we're awful. So with anyone with his record, he's a nice guy. We all like him. He's done a good job for us last year, getting us out of trouble. But I would be surprised if he lasted till the end of the month, if things carried on the way they're going. And like I said earlier, I mean, when you're losing, you start questioning people's decisions. The decision not to play Jaron Puskas, he doesn't really explain that. I know he's put Mate in now. He says that they need to be played to get confidence, but he's not playing them together. So why is he not playing them together? And again, like I said earlier, with your Gunter and McCleary sat on a bench and Mo Barra have been sent out abroad, that decision now will be questioned because you're losing matches. Now, I'm not saying he was wrong or he's right. Personally, I think Mo Barra should still be at the club. I think he's a match winner on his day. And Gunter does a decent job. Fiona McCleary, again, he's not the player he was, I'm sure, 4 or 5 years ago, but he still do a job in this division. And when you're losing, people will question that, and that puts extra pressure on you. And also, it can't be good. I don't know what your feelings on this, Mark, but it can't be good for the side's morale when you've got two senior players that have basically been booted into the under-23s and they've done nothing wrong, as far as I can see. So that, again, it get questioned by us, and it must be questioned by everybody, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is a sort of question that, I mean, God, the inside the mind of the footballer is something, I mean, probably the likes of AD Williams will be able to answer better than me, but as you can look across, you know, even in any workplace, if you look across and see people that are being demoted as you think they're decent, or if they're being promoted and you think they're rubbish, that is something that you notice, and it's something that affects you, and it makes you question the people that are making the decisions, and you look at yourself and thinking, well, hang on, what's going to happen to me? Am I actually here on merit, or am I being held back? Or, you know, it does make you question yourself, and those questions never really bring out the best out of you. So it can't, the Cleary Gunter situation, it's not doing Reading any good, because that we're paying them still. We couldn't obviously get rid of them, and now we're not playing them. So I can't really understand. It's definitely not a good situation to be in. As for Gomez, I mean, I tend to agree. When you say the end of the month, I think if we lose the next three games, or if we get trounced again or whatnot, I do think that this club have shown in the past few years, whoever's been in charge has been perfectly happy to sack a manager. And it's awful, because it not only financially cripples us in a large way, but also just, you know, it brings us back to sort of square one. And in terms of how long I think he should get, I'm tempted to say that you could bring him out until the end of the year and get him until Christmas, and you get a really good idea then. Because if you think about Westie, when we sacked Stan, he'd gone 18 games without a win. Now, in hindsight, you probably could have sacked him after 10 games of that and save yourself the bother for a little time. But with Gomez, there is that temptation, because we were okay last year, and because, as you say, he's a nice guy, he can curry a lot of favour, and he's popular with a lot of the fans, you do have that temptation to hold on a little bit longer, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And like I said, never wants to see him get sacked. Believe me, I'd love him to turn it round. I think if we want to turn it into a more of a positive glance at this situation, I think we are missing chances to get points and win games. And we said it during the last two matches, and we've seen it pretty much all through this season, where we've had opportunities to get back into games, which on another day, we could well have done. Defensively, that needs sorting out. Whether three at the back, we're going to stick with. But like I said, we played four at the back against Fulham and got nowhere near the ball. So that's a concern. I think the tools are there to be further up that league. So if he can access them quickly and think, actually, I've done this wrong, this needs to change, then great. And I hope he does that. But at the moment, from the back end of last season, you'd have to say that doesn't look like happening. 1 week when we showed that we could do it, hasn't been sustained. And that is a worry for me, because you think, well, why hasn't it? Because we weren't playing poor Championship sides that week. We were playing some good sides. You know, we've got some points against good sides. So it's there. We're capable. We're just not doing it. I think he'd point the finger at these strikers if he was to get the sack in the next couple of weeks. And they say, well, we spent a lot of money and they didn't score. That's what's costing my job. But again, will that change? Let's hope so. And I hope it changes. Like I say, I don't want to see him get the sack. He seems like a nice fella. He obviously got us out of trouble last year. But the stats don't look good. And as we say, stats don't lie in general. So we hope he stays around till Christmas and we pick up and we start going up the league. Because let's face it, all is not lost. The Championship, you can go probably 10 games and not get many points and still not get relegated. I think we're probably still only about 10, 12 points off promotion. And I know that seems like a long way away at the moment with 8 points on the board, but it's not that far in the grand scheme of things. And we've seen a Reading team before going from bottom of the league and end up getting promoted. So it wouldn't be out of the ordinary. It just worries me that it doesn't look like it's going to happen, and performances seem to be getting worse rather than better. And then the rot sets in, the home crowd start coming, or they turn on the players, and then we've seen it all before. Teams stop getting results or stop trying, or sort of players go hiding. And you just wonder if they've got the aptitude, some of them players, to have a relegation battle, because I don't think they have.
That's the thing, isn't it? And you're right, I think the quality of the team is there. There is certainly to stay up in the league, of course. Like, you look at teams, you compare ourselves to the teams of Barnsley and Luton and Wigan and whatnot, definitely got better players than they have. And it's just a case of getting the best out of them. And that's kind of the final point that I wanted to ask. And as we go into, you know, the rest of the show and whatnot, if we were to, you know, at some point, obviously Jose Gomes is going to leave. If he leaves with the club more or less in the position it is in now, what sort of manager do you go and get? Do you get your old school? Do you get a new kid on the block? Do you go for a passing band or someone who gets it back to basics? Because for me, I think we've almost been a bit too clever with our managerial appointments over the last few years. With Paul Clement, I'm kind of put into one side because it kind of sounds like he was Ron Gourlay's mate and he got given it. You know, I wasn't upset he got given it. He's a number two, couldn't manage the dressing room, and, you know, the rest we've talked about plenty of times. But with Gomes, we kind of came in with a man who obviously had a bit of pedigree from abroad, but in not very good leagues, obviously wanted the job a lot, really wanted to manage in England, is a nice guy, comes across very well, very personable. But ultimately, his lack of experience at the top level, not Championship isn't the top level, but it's very near it, is kind of the thing that for me is getting him caught out. We kind of had the same with Stam. We went for a very sort of kind of left field name at the time, bit of verve, bit of, you know, playing history but not managerial history. Teams called him out, no plan B, kind of the same as Gomes. Is it worth, therefore, being a bit more basic, being a bit more simple and saying the next man we get in is maybe not a brilliant, you know, esteemed face for fans to sort of fall in love with, but is a man who has a bit of pedigree, a bit of experience, and can just kind of get us back to doing the basics right?
Well, like you said, it's sort of this, I call it sort of new age managerial people coming in from Portugal, and it seems to be like a theme at the moment, just get a Portuguese manager. I mean, Wolves are very successful with their Portuguese influx. I think Reading tried to copy that model to a certain extent. Well, at the moment, it's not worked because we're bottom of the league. So, yeah, you could say it hasn't worked at the moment. Stam, like you said, very similar, had no managerial pedigree, but was a big name. And obviously, everyone knew who he was. And it was good promotion for the club in many ways, because when someone like that turns up on your door, everyone's got their eye on you all of a sudden. And he'd done very well in the first year. So you could say that sort of worked, but then sort of fell by the wayside. Like you said, no plan B. Everyone worked us out. I still think Kermigan's sort of demise had a massive effect on that, because you had that outlet there and all of a sudden it vanished. I think if he doesn't turn things around very quickly, I think we need to look at someone more sort of homegrown, someone who's been around a championship, someone who knows the league, and could do something about getting us sort of out of it and back into the Premier League. And whether they can do that and take us into Premier League and survive in there, only time will tell. It's not easy anyway, no matter who's in charge. So I think, yeah, I reckon you look for someone who's more homegrown, who's been around the league for quite some time. I know a lot of people are saying Parkinson, just because he's got a Reading link. But he's got a good managerial. He's been a decent manager in the Championship on limited budgets. And the thing with that is it's a different scenario. Steve Coppell said the same thing. Different scenario when you've got big money and big egos and you're trying to manage them rather than struggling Bolton, who done very well with nothing. It's a different kettle of fish. I think Mark McGee had a similar problem when he left us. He went to bigger clubs and it sort of all fell by the wayside. Right fit, everyone always says, but no one really knows what the right fit is until the right fit comes in and shows us. So well, every manager...
Funnily enough, as you said, Parkinson, then it reminded me that probably if you showed me Alan Pardew's CV and said, what about this lad? You'd probably think, yeah, it's not a bad CV, actually. But you wouldn't necessarily want Pardew back, would you?
No, not necessarily. But again, it's you never know until they're here, do you? I think Stam was all excited about it, and he changed the style of football. In the first year, it was boring, but successful to a certain stage of events. But you don't know what the right fit is until it's here. And I think, again, we've gone new age. We've gone Portuguese manager. At the moment, that's not working out. Like I said, hopefully it will, but I think we need to look at someone who knows the Championship a little bit better in the future.
Yeah, perhaps, as I say, trying not to outsmart ourselves might be the route to go, but hopefully, you know, rest is right, hopefully we will be talking in a couple of weeks' time about Jose Gomes being back on top of things and Reading being back up the table and whatnot. And ultimately, that is what we want 100% as Reading fans. So let's hear from some other Reading fans and yourselves and go into the mailbag and discuss your questions.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
First question this week comes from Lee Burgess, who asks, do you think Reading will sack Gomez? How many games would you give him? And do Reading need a new manager with more experience to get out of trouble this season? Well, we've kind of basically just explained this. So we will move on to the next question because that is, as I say, something that we have just kind of covered pretty extensively. Paolo,
I think it's mad. Before you move on very quickly, I would say this, though. I think most managers, if they're going to get sacked November time or back end of October, just because everyone knows the transfer window's coming. So he will have, I think he will have till the end of the month, maybe midway through November. But after that, there's no doubt in my mind that they're sacking because they won't want to get relegated with the amount of money they spent.
Yeah, and it's basically the same time. It's the same time he sacked Clement, and almost the same time he should have sacked Stamp. So,
You have to give the new manager opportunity to change things very quickly. And once January's gone, you can't do that anymore, and they're just left with what they got. So he will get, I think, another 4, 5, 6 weeks. But after that, there's no doubt in my mind they're sacking if they have to.
Yeah, well, Paolo says Gomez needs to sort out his soft underbelly. And for me, it's the midfield. The urgency in winning the ball back is non-existent. He seems to have underestimated the Football League. And although we've assembled a talented bunch, the collective defensive responsibility just isn't there. I mean, personally, I can certainly agree with that. And that's kind of why I think the diamond is the best way to go. Because you need a way, for me, you need a way of getting Swift and Ajari on the pitch because they're both our best attacking players. And you need a way, Westy, of getting Pele and Rinomoto on the pitch because Swift and Ajari just won't defend for you.
No, the thing is, I haven't really seen what Pele's all about. I don't know if you can correct me here, but he seems to do a lot of nothing for me. He's there, he's got a good engine, he runs around, but he's not a great ball winner and he's not a great defensive midfielder and he's certainly not great at going forward. So I don't really see what he offers us that someone else can't. Do you know what I mean? Like Rinomoto doesn't. I don't get it.
I think for me, it's the case of when you watch him, he at least covers that position defensively. He won't bomb into the box and leave you exposed. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You can pick up on bits that he doesn't do when the ball is, you know, in more advanced positions and we do have to physically go and win it back. But I think at the very least, he is probably, you know, from a not a very extensive bunch of central midfielders that we have at the moment, one of the better ones or one of the two ones that actually knows how to cover the area. And that's, you know, I suppose after him, we've got Charlie Adam, I suppose, and you can pick some kids out of the academy. We don't actually have anyone, as far as I'm aware, that can do that sort of ball-winning job.
No. You could argue, and like the guy said, they were asked a question about midfield, he said he's playing midfield. Now, you sort of, the midfield is the link between the strikers and the defenders. You know, they're the ones that should be doing the job for them, sort of helping both of them do their jobs. So, if Pele is going to be a holding midfielder and we've got three centre-backs, why a team seem to easily run through us and score goals seemingly at will sometimes? I think he's a 5 out of 10 player and that's about it. There's nothing more. I mean, I don't think anyone can point out one incident this year, really, that you think, actually, he's done really well in that point. I thought he'd done brilliant. I don't notice him when he's on the pitch in general. So that says to me that you're not doing a great job or, like I said, if I'm not noticing, you can't be that good.
No, that's a good point to make. And Peter asks on Twitter, evening gents, I've got to say that without a doubt the start of the season has been more disappointing than last season. We've spent big money in the areas we wanted and yet we are in exactly the same place. Is this down to the manager or poor recruitment? And I think for me, the question on recruitment, it is obviously, you know, we can say that over the years Reading have made bad decisions in recruitment, be it Tevreden or Gourlay or even Howe, there have been some bad players that we've signed. When it comes to Puskás and Zhao, and I suppose any of the summer signings, I don't think I can judge that they've been the problems until they've gone under another manager. If they go under another manager and are awful, then yeah, you can say they're bad players. But for me, it is very viable that certain players just don't click under a manager's system, don't get on with him or whatever. And until that happens, I can't honestly say that it's, you know, not, you know, Jose Gomez's fault, because that's where the buck stops.
I've said many years doing this show that when you buy players, especially from abroad or from foreign leagues, it does take them sometimes a long time to settle into the rigours of the English Championship, because let's face it, it is a real tough league. It's Tuesday, Saturday, every single week. All the sides are as good as one another. There are no easy games, and it does take, they've got to settle. They've got to bring their families over. They've got to settle in a new country. Sometimes it takes a little while. But I can't say we've had bad recruitment this year. Like I said at the start of the show, I think this side's certainly better than the team we had last year. The goalkeeper's great. Miazga, we know he's a good player. He's been here before. Zhao, we see him play for Sheffield Wednesday. Look brilliant. Puskas, come with a big billing. Boye, again, has got some lovely touches. Looks like a decent player. Looks like he could improve again. Ajaria started off the season excellently. So out of them players that I've just mentioned, there's not one person I think Reading fans are going to sit there and say, actually, that was poor recruitment, because these are good players. So if we think they're good players and they're not winning games, then the buck stops with the manager. It always has and always will.
Yeah, and as I say, if we bring in someone else and Puskas gets worse or doesn't improve, then I'll start understanding. And it actually boils down to the sort of thing that I often say about academy players. And with academy players, if they are, you know, God's gift to the earth and we think that they're brilliant, and yet four successive managers have decided not to play them, then maybe we need to change our opinion. And yeah, that's actually the bigger indicator, rather than what we've, you know, been told by Football Manager or whatever thing that has told us that a player is particularly good. So
the only thing you can ever question about a new player into your side, it's not was it good recruitment, is have they got a good attitude? Do you know what I mean? Do they really care enough to want to chase players down or defend from the front or put in a shift when they know you're up against it? That's the only question you can ever have. And have we got questions about the players that I just mentioned? Then I suppose in many ways we have, because is their attitude right? Do they really want to fight for it? Only time will tell.
Yeah, and the final question this week comes from Royals fan 36, who on the McCleary topic says, is it time to bring McCleary back? We lack width, which granted the formation doesn't help, but we need to stretch the opposition. Also, why do we only play well after we concede? Well, I think my only other point that I can really make on the whole winger topic is that with Andy Yeardom, obviously, at right back, you have a defender who completely bombs on, and he does provide a lot of width down the wing, and he's very good at that. But I'm kind of tempted now, in terms of the fact we've got Gunter and Teddy Howard as players in the reserves, is it not sort of time to consider playing Yeardom as a right winger? And obviously we've got McCleary as well, but McCleary's only one man. He can only do so much if we start playing, you know, proper wingers, with Boye maybe on the other flank, and Mate, I suppose, can do a job as well. But Andy Yeardom, to me, just seems like the type of player who has all the characteristics of a winger and yet just hasn't been played there yet. And is it not a possible solution to just stick him up there and say, you don't have to worry about the defending as much anymore, mate, because you're obviously better at attacking?
Yeah, no, again, Andy Yeardom probably turned into one of my favourite players. I think he's a very good player. I think he rarely lets the side down. He just puts in a tremendous shift up and down that wing. He's a good right back. He's a good left back. He's a good tackler. He's a good all-round player, and that's one of the reasons why Gunter's sat on the under-23s, because he's really surpassed the requirements. I know I brought up Gareth McCleary earlier and about the decisions made by Gomez, but I don't think McCleary and Gunter would be the answer to Reading flying up the league. Let's get that straight right now, because they clearly wouldn't be. But to isolate in the way they have, does that help the squad as a whole? That's the question I'm asking, because I don't think it does. McCleary, I'd love to see him do a few cameos, 15, 20 minutes. But let's face it, at 32, and judging by the last two seasons, that's probably all he's got in him. If you're starting McCleary thinking he's going to save Reading from relegation, then you may as well get your book out to see where the League One clubs are now, because that's not going to happen. I just think maybe Yeardom could do a job at right midfield, right wing. And then you'd have to say, well, Gunter would do a job at right back, because you know he can overlap and he plays that position quite well because he's done it for many years. So maybe that's an option. But again, will it change our fortunes? I think this is a small part of a bigger problem.
Yeah, ultimately, I'm not convinced that Gomez is going to start playing wingers, because it is, you know, it's just not an area of the squad that we are blessed with. McCleary can do a job, as you say, but doing it on his own and starting there week in, week out, Saturday, Tuesday, not so much in his wheelhouse anymore. So sadly, that's just something that we'll have to wait and see. And probably, unless Gomez is going to make a massive decision and whatnot, then it's probably just going to have to continue the way things are.
The thing is, Mark, he's sort of ruled that out himself by getting rid of all the wingers, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Made sure we can't play with wingers because we haven't got any. And then you'd be asking Boye and Mate to play on the wing, when I don't think that would help us because you make us even weaker defensively than we already are.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to play wingers, you need ones that track back, and McCleary hasn't got the legs to do it, and the other ones aren't interested. So that's the case we're at the moment as Reading Football Club, and it's a very odd situation for a club that's so esteemed with its wingers past, but wingers present not so much. So let's move on into to news bites and some more good news, actually, for Yaki Mate.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So quick housekeeping on terms of the news bites, and that's that the Leeds game on the Tuesday 26th of November is on Sky. It's the main TV game as opposed to being on Red Button, so it's on Sky Go and whatnot. For anyone who thought that there was a chance that Leeds wouldn't be on TV that Tuesday night, they were wrong. Reading Leeds is at the Medeski. Also, as anyone turning up on the last Tuesday night for Fulham, as I got in the car and looked at my phone and saw that Yaku Mate had been given a new contract, I thought that I was back into a period about 4 months ago when he last got his new contract, Westie. So to 2023 now, Mate's had his contract extended. We don't know the ins and outs of it. I suppose we don't know the numbers and details and whatnot, but this is a bit of a weird one still.
Yeah, it was a bit strange. I mean, he didn't get a new contract that long ago, did he? So whether there's been some interest from other clubs and Renan just making sure that Ivory doesn't go anywhere, or we can ask for a high value for him if we were to sell him, I don't know. But like I say, with Mate, you know what you get from him. I think he's done really well to turn around his fortunes since he came here. Because when we got him from Paris Saint-Germain, he looked a bit lost. He's certainly got the physicality to be a good championship player. And like I say, he scores goals in this league. So he's worth keeping around, I'd have said. So good luck to him. I mean, if you get a new contract, you must be doing something right.
Well, yeah, into 2023, I must admit, going into the last season, I wasn't a huge fan of Mate, and what I wasn't entirely sure that he wasn't just kind of a pretty streaky kind of player who, I think there's a good stat that I found, there's about 5 months of the season last year he didn't actually score in, despite being our top scorer. And this season, I think he's done pretty much the same again, and he's done all right, and I'm warming to him, and I think the fact that the club are giving him a new contract shows that there is a long-term relationship brewing there. And if we were to sell him, ultimately, with the scoring record he's had this season, it won't be to a Premier League team, and it might be back to France. But, you know, we'll have to sort of wait and see what happens with that. And if there is a good reason to extend it, maybe the club had the option anyway and have just sort of, you know, tagged it on for a bit of good news, then so be it. Obviously, we're going into the international break, so just a quick few internationals that you may or may not have heard of and called up. Obviously, Mate has been called up to the Ivory Coast squad again. George Puskas is in the Romania squad. They'll play Faroe Islands and Norway. So hopefully a chance for him to find some form. And Chris Gunter is in the Welsh squad still. And so a few England youth internationals worth mentioning as well. Conya Boyce-Clark, the young goalkeeper, is in the England under-17 squad. Gerry Dorset and Dejan Tetek, that is, are in the under-18s. Omar Richards, however, has been dropped by the under-21s for their England games. I don't think he actually got on the pitch when he was called up for the last break. And quickly, we'll round up what's been going on around the rest of the teams at Reading. In the under-23s, Michael Elise is up for the Premier League 2 Player of the Month award. They play Colchester on Monday, about an hour after we finish recording this. So that result is probably in as you listen to this, in the Premier League Cup. They lost 4-0 to Stoke last time out, though, so not on too good a form. Neither of the under-18s, actually. They lost 1-0 to Arsenal on Saturday. They next go to Villa after the international break, away twice in the Premier League and in their cup competition as well. There was also a new contract for left-back Ethan Bristow in the week, so congratulations to him. He's on a pro deal now at the club. And also the women's team, they're currently having their international break now, as it were. So they're next in action versus Everton at Adams Park, 2 p.m. on October the 13th, that's the Sunday. Three of their players are playing for Wales and three of the players playing for Norway in the international break. So a few Reading women's keep an eye on then as we go through the internationals and obviously some young players as well. Conya Boyce-Clark is certainly one to keep an eye out for the future. He's done pretty well for the England youth team so far. So as we've got a couple of weeks off, we'll look to big game preview and focus on the few games that are going to be coming up after the break.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right then, Preston at home, QPR away, and then Forest away are the three games we've got when we're back, Westy. Usually, I mean, we look at those three teams, yes, of years gone by, and think that's three winnable games, but they're actually third, ninth, and second in the league. They're third, fourth, and first in the form table. So we've got, you know, three of the top four teams in terms of the form table in front of us now. And it doesn't bring much optimism when that is the case.
It's a good opportunity to turn things around now. That's the way you've got to look at it. No, it doesn't. Yeah. At the moment, everyone's pretty much above us. So there is no easy games for Reading, judging by last couple of results or for the whole season so far, really. But in general, Reading do tend to perform well against sort of the better, so-called better side. So hopefully after the international break, we can come back and pick up a few points. But a bit like you, I don't really see where they're coming from at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Playing Preston in particular feels like this, playing the team that you almost want to be, the way that they set out with their recruitment and whatnot. You look at the sort of club that Reading are, you know, that's the club we used to be, basically. And the results against them in the last three times we've played them, we've actually won. So, you know, we've got actually a little bit of form against Preston. And then QPR and Forest away, I think away from home. That Jose Gomez has never really fixed his away from home problem, has he? We've had a couple of... Well, I think we've had a win against Ipswich, and after that, nothing really springs to mind. And going to QPR and Forest, it just feels like the sort of games that might get away from us.
Yeah, you'd have to be concerned. I mean, our home form's shocking, but away from home, you can't. Our teams will be looking forward to playing this, I think. And that's never good for anybody. It's made me laugh what you said about there, about Preston and being the sort of team we used to be, and kind of eulogising about it. I think we used to moan about that team as well. When we weren't buying big name strikers and we were just getting players sort of no one had really heard of, but hey.
Yeah, no, that's very true, actually. and the sort of teams who, you know, maybe just have a bit more ambition and that sort of stuff. But yeah, we were good back then, which is funnily enough, we're probably not now. And I suppose as well as the international break comes up, I must say that I think it's a good time for the international break to have come up, because we did need, especially after the Fulham game, you know, Bristol City wasn't a disaster as such. You lose to those sort of teams in any sort of season, but to have 2 weeks off now, most of our players kind of will be staying around the club. Jose Gomez is under pressure, but I don't think he's under immediate pressure. So it's not too bad in terms of the atmosphere around the club. And there must be a lot of determination to change things around. And we've got a good couple of weeks now just to kind of work on those basics that we talked about. Any player that's low on confidence doesn't have to get up in the morning worrying about, you know, I've got to play in a couple of days. Oh, God, what's going to happen? It just kind of calms things down, which I think we need at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it doesn't matter which way you look at it. International break is not enjoyed by anybody, certainly not the fans, I don't think. Will it be a good time for them to have a break? Only time will tell. If they come back and win three games, then yeah. If they come back and lose three games, everyone will say, well, the international break come at the wrong time. I don't think there is no wrong or right time. It's just a matter of what you do after or before it. And at the moment, it's not been too good.
No, it's a fair point to make. But we'll finish then on the prediction league and just wrap up with the last couple of games and how those of us who predicted a string of defeats are not doing too bad in the prediction league. Myself, I've managed to find myself top of the prediction league with 13 points at the moment after saying that we'd lose our last two games. Johnny and Wim following behind on 6, then yourself, Westy on 5, Ollie 4, and then Sim and Handbags, the optimistic pair, dragging their heels on 2 points at the bottom. So,
that's not my Handbags to be that optimistic. I'm surprised he's down the bottom.
I know. It's opposite day basically for Reading this season. But as a sort of preliminary prediction for Preston, obviously you're more than welcome to give me a text in a fortnight and change it. But what do you sort of see as we retake to the football pitch in a couple of weeks, how we'll get on?
Well, when you do predictions, you should do it based on what you know and what you've seen and what you understand. But I tend to do it on what I hope is going to happen. So let's go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I'm kind of tempted to join you on that, to be honest. I think as we go into these sort of, you know, these breaks, I know what you mean about it's all about what you do after, and I do think that Reading will hopefully make the most of it. And I do think a 1-1 draw is a pretty fair prediction at the moment, because it is the Championship at the end of the day. And the season, I think my sort of parting message is that the season is not over in any sense for Reading at the moment. It's only early October. It's just a bit of a drag that we have to have these conversations for the third year in a row. I actually looked earlier, and our conversation, we had a podcast last year on the 7th of October 2018. We had a podcast called We Need to Talk About Paul Clements. So we've just continually gone through these sort of motions, and you know, hopefully there's an end to it in sight.
Yeah, again, I remember having similar ones about Brendan Rodgers and all the other managers that have been around that era, that we have the same conversation about him. Is it time to get rid of him? Unfortunately, what we really want is have a conversation about someone's trying to take our manager, because that means you're doing well.
God, I can't think of the last time I had a conversation about that.
It's not happened for quite some time.
No, certainly not when I've been on the podcast. But anyway, the plan for the show next week, we don't have a show planned. We have got a couple of interviews and whatnot we're trying to work out, but it doesn't look like any of them will be in time for the international break. So we'll hopefully be back in a couple of weeks with a normal show, and if not, then we've found something good, and that'll be in front of you then. So until then, thanks Westy for popping on, and I'm sorry that this chat hasn't quite been as it's pretty dreary outside, so I suppose it's kind of matched the sort of gloominess around us at the moment.
Do you know what, Mark, when I came on, and then when you said come on the show this week, I always look forward to it. I love it. But I remember coming on the last time I came on, I was eulogising about how great we were and how things are turning around, and now I can see us getting promoted, and my £5 bet on them getting promoted 175-1 looked like a sure thing. It's amazing what 4 or 5 weeks can do to you. Optimism, it's killed it dead.
Well, I'd promise to have you on next time that we're feeling really optimistic, but it's much better to have you on every sort of 3 or 4 weeks than every 6 months. So
yeah, I want to be on now and again, that's the thing.
thanks for popping on there, mate, and thanks everyone for listening to I must admit it's probably not been the most entertaining podcast to listen to in terms of those looking for the sort of happy, positive, upbeat sort of side of the football club at the moment, but I like to think we tell it like it is, and quite frankly at the moment Reading Football Club have found themselves in a bit of a funk, in the sort of form that, well, we're pretty much all used to, and I suppose that's why familiarity has bred contempt for this time, and hopefully Jose Gomez won't become the third victim in a, you know, third season in a row that we've sacked a manager, and hopefully we can pull it out of the bag and this international break will be at the right time and we'll be laughing all the way to the bank after three very tough games when we come back, and we'll see you then. Come on, you ass.
I was going to say, if you are that optimistic fan who thinks we're talking nonsense, then please write in and tell us why we're wrong.